Chefs at Johnson & Wales and in thousands of restaurants around the globe will tell you that the hottest name in hand-forged Japanese-style knives at an affordable price is Forged to Table. The company, founded in 2017 by Johnson & Wales alumni Noah Rosen, when he was still a student, is dedicated to the pursuit of the perfect knife for culinary students, working chefs, and home cooks alike. His guiding motto was and is uncompromising quality at a fair price. And though Noah is no longer a student, he is still dedicated to that same pursuit. His flagship blade, the 8-inch Gyoto chef's knife, has developed a cult following among kitchen professionals across the country. So we're recording this episode in the middle of the Johnson & Wales FIT Symposium, our fourth symposium, and part of that event is a ton of workshops, one of which is all about possibilities with pork. We're doing a lot of fabrication. We're doing a lot of butchering. It's actually being hosted by Chef Mark Esty out in the Nevada, Reno area. We're using the Forged to Table boning knife. It is fantastic, razor sharp, durable, and the perfect tool for breaking down all things pork. You can order your own Forged to Table knife, perhaps their boning knife, from their spectrum of choices that fit your kitchen needs right now at ForgedToTable.com. Culinary Now listeners can also enter the code Culinary Now with their order to receive 15% off their purchase. Forged to Table knives are also available at the Johnson & Wales bookstore, but the discount does not apply, so please shop online. Be sure to follow Forged to Table at Forged to Table on Instagram for great recipes from their test kitchen and to keep yourselves in the loop for exciting new knives and kitchen gear, plus the occasional giveaway, which actually happens all the time. Forged to Table is proud to support the development of new and aspiring cooks and chefs everywhere and to join in the effort to create a better industry for us all. Thanks, Forged to Table, for sponsoring this podcast. All right, welcome everyone to the Culinary Now podcast. Today, I am joined at the 2024 FIT Symposium by a very special guest, Barton Seaver.
Oh, I'm special.
Thank you for taking a few minutes. I know the schedule is super tight. I'm going to jump right into it. I've known you for quite some time now, and in that time, you've worn so many hats. I mean, you've been a chef, an author, an educator, dad.
Yep. Yeah. Most importantly.
Your son's in the room. I love this. What do you consider yourself today?
Husband, father, chef, author, seafood evangelist. It's my mission to get more people across all demographics eating more seafood. And I want that for positive public health, environmental, and economic outcomes. That's what I'm doing. And that's my little seven-year-old Alden who's with us.
I am so happy that he's here because you see people on like TV or you read their books, connecting them as a human is so important. We're in Johnson & Wales, but I'm going to flip the script here because you and I both went to CIA.
Yeah, we did.
And I think we went in a very special time, which was sort of that late 90s, early 2000s. I know both of us probably took away a ton from that educational experience.
Certainly.
Where do you think culinary education is today? Has it changed? Is it still valuable?
Interesting. So I consider myself a recovering chef and restaurateur. So we had restaurants down in the D.C. area, worked for Jose Andres for a little while, had my own restaurants, and then I got out of restaurants over a decade ago. Mm-hmm. And have had opportunity to do so many different things. As you mentioned, I've worn a lot of hats, all of it with the intention of being around sustainable seafood and working in that space. So where is culinary education these days? I'm not employing graduates these
right.
days. I'm not in the trenches in that way anymore. But what I have seen from the periphery, but also from within, I've been invited to teach. I'm teaching in public health.
Right.
So precisely that, I'm teaching in public health where culinarians are now pursuing public health paths and vice versa. So I'm seeing just an incredible diversification of the expectations of what food education can, should be, and just a broadening scope of what are the goals of food in our society these days. And education is, playing catch up in a way or, in a supportive role of understanding really that, we need people working in Congress who understand food. We need people working in R&D that understand food. We need people working in public health and medical professions that understand food, that we really understand it now as a fundamental pillar of the human condition, as well as a fundamental mechanism to create the society and planet that we want to live in.
It's amazing that the sort of commonality or the centerpiece of everything in the world happens just to be food. So that having a degree in food or being able to cook makes you such a greater practitioner in whatever you do. And I love how you mentioned like Congress and government. Like, yes, we need more people in those positions making rules that understand sort of the bigger picture in the food system.
Yeah. Well, you think, you know, things like the Farm Bill.
Yeah.
It's called the Farm Bill, but really it's the what do we owe our neighbors bill. What type of society do we want to live in? I think 80% of the Farm Bill total is really about WIC, food stamps, right. Public food programs. Really, just what do we want to use food? Do we have a responsibility to empower our neighbors? So understanding how food manifests itself in the daily lives of the American populace is fundamental to that. That's awesome. And it's just a wonderful opportunity, too.
I know. So I think anyone who's listening to this that knows you or has been fortunate enough to read one of your books, they know you for seafood. You obviously are a farmer and you grow your own food and you have so many other interests, but I want to stick with seafood for a little bit, and I will stick with the CIA thing for a while. I want to talk about, because I don't think it's talked about enough, how important seafood was in the late 90s, early 2000s at the CIA. And there was a pillar teaching seafood. And I know Corky was very important to you. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would ever think of talking about him on this podcast, but I have you and I have to. Can you describe him and how important that person was to not only your career, but just to everyone else who came through that class?
Sure. So Howard Corky Clark, rest in peace, passed away a few years back. As you mentioned, he really was the pillar of seafood education. And he owned that kitchen for decades, really. And he was an old school, old white dude, yep. Chef, with some problematic behavioral things. And so not to glaze over that, but also to say, you know, he was a product of his generation, but was also so indebted to and in service of his community. And something that I love most about Corky is, like, he was, you know, he was a first responder. He mm-hmm. was a judge. He had been in the Navy. He really believed in the betterment of society through individual participation in it. And that speaks to the sort of the broader essence of the man, but that's what he brought to education.
Agreed.
That's what he brought to seafood in particular. And because he was so politically or sort of culturally powerful mm-hmm. within the CIA, seafood itself was raised up in importance.
100%.
In ways that, you know, Gerard Viverito, who's there now, who is ascended in and earned himself sort of that pillar role, is doing in his own way now. So congrats to him. But it really takes, as in everyone's life, in whatever walk you choose, there's always that one mentor.
I know.
There's that one person that you find that suddenly just somehow translates something you might see as external or foreign or other and makes it relevant to you. And Corky did that with seafood.
I could not agree more. And like I took a lot of classes, as did you, at the CIA. I don't remember any phrase from any of them, but I could tell you how to make seafood or the right fish stock based on what Corky would say and his way of delivering that. Like, I would never put anything besides a white flesh fish in a fish fumet, because that was how I was trained to do it. So truly a special individual and a mentor to boot.
You don't remember clean, dry fish, clean, dry board?
I do remember my first day in that lab.
Do you need me to yell it at you?
You
because
could.
Then it might spark what it felt like.
I still have nightmares of cleaning squid and not realizing that the ink, when it gets on your apron, doesn't come off.
No.
But believe me, he reminded me of that every day of my life, even after I got out of his class. So you're right. There were some rough spots there, but a mentor beyond belief.
How we going, guys?
Hey.
What's happening?
People walking through. I love it.
Yeah.
This is always something here.
That's good.
We just got done with one of your presentations at the symposium, and you really were just making a plea for people to eat more seafood.
Mm-hmm.
Not surprising that even at a culinary school, we get a lot of first, second year students that are just like, ew. What do you say to those people?
Seafood has never been put into context for you. Seafood has never been celebrated by someone in your life in the way that it hits the plate with the with the gravity of tradition or celebration or just even enthusiasm. You know, I mean, in the way that, like, other foods, maybe it's the traditional dish from your grandmother or whatever it is. Like, everybody's got some food that hits the table, and there's, like, you know, and there's levity, there's buoyancy to it because it's served with emotion, right? And so to the people who say, like, no, I don't like seafood. Well, it's because you were never taught to love seafood.
Right.
You were never even, or maybe even given permission to love seafood. And that was my one takeaway to the students today, which is like, you know, for all of this you've heard from Breonna Warner and Tyler from Monterey Bay, it's like, no, you have permission to fall in love with seafood, to make that a focus and to celebrate it. And bottom line is there is no such thing as bad seafood. There is only once glorious seafood poorly treated.
Right.
So it's about understanding the difference and understanding where to find quality, how to treat quality, how to celebrate it, and put it on the plate in ways that those who you're feeding, who we are so fortunate to serve, take away from that your own positivity that you put into their recipe.
I mean, I just think if we villainized other proteins the way that seafood gets treated, it would be I mean, we get crucified, but
to this point, how many times have you heard, like, oh, I don't cook seafood at home because it makes my house stink? It's like,
no.
Have you ever cooked a hamburger in your house? Because it's going to smell like burgers for 2 days, or bacon, or mac and cheese. It's like, it's just, we've always made it other.
I know.
And it's
and the versatility there. I mean, we go back to the squid, which, by the way, did stain my apron. I mean, squid is so versatile. It's such a flavorful product, but it's also the biggest blank canvas in the world. And you can do so much with it. To pivot a little bit and to sort of round this out, because I know your time's so valuable, and thank you again for sitting down. You've written so many amazing books. American
thank
Seafood
you.
Is by far, like, my Bible. When I did a presentation on monkfish a few months ago, and I just essentially copied what you wrote, and I gave you credit.
Awesome.
I gave you credit. I gave you credit.
Oh, thank you.
But it was so, it is so inspiring. Having written all these books, number one, do you have a favorite? It's probably hard to say. It's like, do you have a favorite kid? But no. And number two, if we actually get a lot of students that want to write books, can you just describe real quick that process? And is there something that they should absolutely avoid doing that caused you maybe some growing pains?
Well, if you're hoping to make any money at it, avoid writing books about seafood. it's just a small category, but that's what it is. It is my evangelism. It is my gospel put to the page because I am just so fervent and in my belief around the values that come from it and just the what we gain when we participate in sustainable seafood.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite book is American Seafood. So
yes.
It's not a cookbook. It's a narrative history of the social, culinary, and cultural history of every species landed in the United States. Writing that book broke my brain. I can imagine. I read 150,000 pages of research reading. I swear at some point I was out in my office and I clicked the next link and it was like, congratulations, you have reached the end of the internet. Goodbye. I was like, oh, like just the sort of the rabbit holes that you could fall through, because ultimately seafood has been a through line in the history of this country. White people found these shores because of cod. And in my place, in Maine, the birthplace of fisheries and therefore the economy of this settler nation, we've seen the decline of that, but we're also seeing the future in aquaculture. And so it's this wonderful through line through which we can not only understand and define and see cultural pathways into our past, but also begin to author and narrate, really as engineer and architect of the systems that we want to see. So that was American Seafood. It was my love letter to the American industry to say that this is, seafood mattered, so that we can decide that it matters still. So that was really a work of passion. It was a work of love. It was just a work of deep curiosity. And if you're going to write a book, if you are going to put yourself on a page, make sure you understand how to put yourself out there. Like, find that passion, cultivate the passion. You know, you're not writing recipes, you're writing a biography of yourself. And the books that really work, the books that really succeed, are when people are, when the author is honest with themselves and really just understands that process of exposing their creativity, their values, their experiences, their own biography, putting it on a page in a way that anyone else can pick it up and enjoy it.
And you do that. Barton Siever, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate you.
Special thank you again to Barton Siever for joining us on this incredibly busy day. His books and his skill and passion for making everyone more aware of seafood is just outstanding. Please find a copy of his book, American Seafood, or any of the books he wrote. They are truly life-changing if you want to learn more about fish. Also, a special thanks to Matt Burns, who does all the music for the Culinary Now podcast. He also presented and played at the symposium that we're at currently. Thanks, Matt, for doing that. And if you want to reach out to us, please send us an email at Culinary Now Podcast via Facebook, Instagram, what have you. Our email is culinarynowpodcast@gmail.com. We love to hear from our listeners to help support this project. We'll talk to you soon.